Vihaya kamanya sarvam.
Pumams charati nisprahaha.
Nirmamo nirahankaraha.
Sashantim adhigacchati. Vihaya kaman yaha sarvan puman charati nisprahaha nirmamaha nirahankaraha saha shantim adhigacchati. Shankara introduces this verse, yasmat evam tasmat, because it being like this, therefore. And so that's referring back to the previous verse that's saying, you know, just as the rivers or the waters flow into the ocean and the ocean remains the same, you know, like that, all of the kamas, all of the desires, the raga dveshas that flow into the mind of the jnani, don't change them, that buddhi in any way. The jnani retains that shanti. Shantim apnuti, but not kamakami. The one, if this is from verse 70, but not the kamakami. The kamakami, like kamikaze, I don't know if you know what that means. Just came to me. So that na kamakami means the one who desires has these binding raga dveshas, the one who has a real desire for these objects of desire. For that person, really, there is no shanti. Really, as we've said, it's just because my own being has been projected out, and I have to get it back. I feel empty or incomplete until I get that back. And of course, what I actually get back is just a semblance of my own being. It's just a vritti that's as though reflecting me, a shantavritti. And with a shantavritti, I feel like myself. I feel like myself. I feel at home with myself when a shantavritti is there. The fulfillment of a desire can give me that shantavritti. And so until I really know what's going on, recognize my own ananda, and understand how this projection works, how can I not go after it? Because you are agitated until you fulfill it, and when you fulfill it, you feel happy. And everybody else feels just like you do, you know. So how are you not going to fall for that? Because when you feel happy, you feel at home with yourself. And so really these non-binding desires are something that belong to the jnani or to the mumukshu who has that understanding, who recognizes the source of ananda, recognizes my own being, and sees that just simply as a projection. There are many ways to get a shantavritti. You know, I do not have to fulfill a desire to have a shantavritti, as that's the only way I can get the shantavritti is to go through all of this projection and then pulling it back and then have that moment of shanti. I can have a shantavritti simply by not wanting anything. That's a great shantavritti. You have that shantavritti naturally until a desire arises. For jnani, there is a resolution of really wanting anything. The wanting becomes what we call just mitya. Any wanting is really just a preference. It's a wish, but it's not. It's totally non-binding. I'm not going to get involved in a desire to the detriment of my own shanti. That's how jnani will feel. I like to just be with myself. Why would I run after that? But it doesn't even exist out there. So then that becomes these as though binding raga dveshas become something that I recognize that I need to work on. You know. So let me get into this verse, because this verse is just a continuation of his previous verse. So it says, Vihaya kaman yahasarvan puman. Puman means a person. So a person, yahahu, vihaya, having given up, having abandoned, kaman sarvan, all desires, all binding desires. So a person who, having abandoned, in the conjugal past participle, having abandoned sarvan kaman, accusative plural, having abandoned all desires, chadati wanders about the world, wanders about in their life, nispraha, free of desire, and free of niramamaha, nirahankaraha, free of the sense of mind, and nirahankaraha, also free of the ego. We'll see in a minute what that means. And that person, being nispraha, free of desire, free of this ahank, this mamatva buddhi, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, and free of this nirahankara, shantim adhigachati. That person gains shanti. That person gains peace. So here, again, these terms, what do they mean? You know now kind of, what does it mean again, just to reiterate, what does it mean to give up, you know, all desires? It means basically that they become non-binding desires. Non-binding desires means that I have motivation and energy to pursue something that is interesting to me or something that is desirable for me. But it's non-binding, which means that pursuit, that object of desire nor and the pursuit of the desire, neither one of them have the capacity to take away my own shanti. That's the key. It's not that I'm not motivated to do this or motivated to that. I can do so many things. Swamiji even uses the example in a previous verse. Shankara was considered a Mahatma, a great jnani. He wrote so many books, you know, so many bhashyas, you know. He had to have some motivation or some desire to do that, or he would never undertake it, you know. But non-binding desire, or do my best. So when Swamiji says, I do my best for whatever is there to be done. That's what you do. You do your best. It's non-binding. I don't lose my shanti if what I'm doing is successful or not successful. I'm doing my best. My ananda has nothing to do with it. This is what's presented to me. Even the desires that I follow, those are non-binding desires. I'm motivated to do these things. And so I do them. But the results for jnani, the results have no capacity to alter the shantavritti in my mind. For a mukshu who's gaining that nishta, I take all of the results of my actions with that prasada buddhi. I take it as, even though I have that cartridge one there, I take it as with that blessing from Bhagavan. It's a blessing from Bhagavan. So that that nispraha, that being free of desire, is, you know, being free of binding desire. Desires are mitya. So nispraha means I'm free of the, spraha is desire. So nis means without desire, free from desire. And spriha, what kind of desire? I'm free from those binding desires. It's really important to understand this, because people get into notions which would make you a very strange person. An abnorm. We call them abnorms. Some of us do. Okay. An abnormal person, abnorm for short. Okay. Do you think that to be a jnani that your mind should go flat? No feelings, no emotions. Everything is exactly the same. That's not realistic. That's like a robot, you know. The world is very colorful. My mind is also very colorful. There's many, many things that I love to do, things that I enjoy doing. If they're non-binding desires within Dharma, there's no problem at all, because nothing is happening to me. I'm not losing myself as I'm doing that. If the things work out, they work out. If they don't work out, they don't work out. It's okay. It doesn't matter because my being is not at stake. That's Ajnani. That's Nispriha. Nirmama. Swamiji gives a good example for this. It means free of this minus. He says, you know how little children will say, this is mine, or this is mine, this is mine. And kids will kind of fight over their toys, and then you have to teach them how to share, you know, and all this kind of thing. So this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, can't have it, you know. Even animals can be like that. Like when Lucky and Hero's this little tiny dog that Jackie and David, two students that come to the farm all the time, they always bring Hero. And Hero's mature. He's like a little, Hero's like a little Ajnani. He's 14 years old. You know? He's been through everything. And so he's fine, you know. But Lucky is very selfish. but he's kind of selfish, you know. He's kind of possessive, you know. And he wants everything that Hero has. I think I told you this. Like if Hero finds a neat, nice place to stay, to lie down, comfy place, Lucky will just sit there and wait for him to leave. And as soon as he leaves, he's there. You know? When Jackie's feeding Hero his food, you know, she actually takes him upstairs to feed him the food because of Lucky. So, but Lucky will wait at attention and really waits for Jackie to come and give him a treat because Hero has been fed. Whereas Hero has none of it. He has none of that. Hero's like he's that kind of a Ajnani dog. You know? He just, the things that come to him, he takes. The only thing is Hero really doesn't like Jackie to ever leave him. So so he has that sangha. He's got that sanghatvam. He's just perfectly fine as long as Jackie is, that he can see her. And if he can't see her, then it's very beautiful. I'm just saying, you know, just saying, animals too have their needs and their raga dvesha, you know, that have to be neutralized. It's not just humans. But unless you have self-knowledge, how not to have those needs? How not to have it? Because your whole well-being is dependent for you, that well-being is dependent on that. The only thing that eases it up a little bit is Dharma, where you, as you mature, you become more attached to Dharma than to sensory pursuits, because you've experienced over and over that Dharma gives a deeper shanti, a deeper sense of well-being than any type of sensory pursuit. So that let me do my Dharma is a great relief, you know, great relief for you when things aren't working out. Let me just do things to the best of my ability. But even that is not enough. What is enough is that I know myself and I recognize myself and I recognize that ananda, my mind abiding in that ananda does all of these things, but it's non-motivating. I mean non-binding. Motivating but not binding. So the nirmama, little children, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. So what Swamiji says is that what happens is these little children grow beards. Grow beards, you know. Little children, they grow beards, they become adults. But really inside, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. Just like a little child. For Ajnani, it's so different because what I need, I have. And so even this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, is also non-binding. Because if it's taken away or I lose it, that is fine. So that's one level. Even my minds are non-binding. Because you do have this is mine, like this is my watch or this is my book. But if somebody takes the book or they want your watch, they can have it or you don't really care. You know, you like to be able to give things. Swamiji is always being given things, really nice little things, and he's always giving them away. He's just so, he loves it. He just gives and gives and gives and gives. He gives you all these books, he gives, yeah, good book, give. I think our Vagishananda is a big giver like that also. Just give. You know? The sense of mind, you think of the sense of mind, it's not like all of a sudden you don't know the difference between mine and yours. You know that difference. But you don't have that minus is mitya. It means it doesn't have any hold on you. It's a non-binding my. How Swamiji talks about it, it's just a little bit, it's the same in practicality, but it's the fact that what isn't mine? What isn't myself? Like say for even right now, just in this room, the immediacy of your experience. What is not yourself? Because everything exists with you, within you. Everything has you for its adhishtana, you for its being. So everything, in a sense, is absolutely the same and absolutely you. It's really a kind of a... We don't usually walk around thinking like that, but that is the fact of it. What is the difference, if you look at it like this, what is the difference here, just in this room itself, between the subject and the object? The difference between the subject and the object, that difference only exists within duality. In terms of the truth, I am the self of the subject and I am the self of the object. Right? The object is me, the self is me, the object is me. And anything intervening, the space intervening, is also me. And so where is there going to be something which I own, or I can say, that is not me to own, to have as mine? So I can say the whole thing is mine. There isn't anything that isn't mine. And so I don't need to own it, I already do. In fact, we all do. We all own the whole thing. And so when you own the whole thing, there's nothing else to grab onto to be mine. See what I mean? So that also becomes a beautiful kind of reality. This whole minus becomes totally mitya. A little bit tangential to this, but there's a story that Swamiji used to often tell. I don't know if they have this in Sweden or not, but have you ever seen these animal crackers? They're made out of graham cracker. So they come, in the States, they come in a little box like this that looks like a circus cage. And this little box is very colorful. It's a little circus cage. And all of these animal crackers, one looks like a giraffe and one looks like a dog and an elephant and a monkey. You know, there's probably maybe 10 different types of animals in there, all made of a graham cracker. And so the story Swamiji tells is a mother has gone to the shopping, and she bought nice box of animal crackers to surprise the kids with. Her kids were there, and then some little friends were over, so there was about 5 or 6 kids. And so she was going to surprise them, and she brought out the box of animal crackers, and she showed everybody, and they were all excited. They couldn't wait to get their animal cracker. You know, so at first, before she even gets it out, one little girl says, "I want the horse! I want the horse!" And so the mom says, "Oh, okay, I want the horse." So she looks, there's the horse. So she gives her the horse. "I want the giraffe." "Giraffe." "I want the elephant." "The elephant." Forgot all about the graham cracker. Now it's just, I want the elephant, I want the horse, I want the dog, I want the cat, I want the giraffe. "I want the giraffe too." "No, I want the giraffe too." Uh-oh, we're out of giraffes. We're out of giraffes. "I'm sorry, honey, we're out of giraffes. Would you like the elephant?" "No." "I want the giraffe." "The elephant's really good. The elephant's even a little bigger, maybe." Samsara. That's a samsara. "I want this, I want this, I want this." Really? Really? When they're all made of only you? When they're all made of only you? You is the very source of the ananda that you seek, you know? So let's grab on. Let's have the raga. Let's have the raga toward the ananda itself. That's a mumukshu. And it's considered, they have, Moksha has a raga, a binding raga. Very tough, because it's binding. The raga means a binding desire for to know myself, to gain self-knowledge. And you know what what we say in the tradition? That's good. That's a good one. That binding raga is good. And it is the only one that's good, because it's the only one that resolves the desire. This raga, this, because what you're really seeking in the desire template, the binding raga, is I want this so that I can be happy. You have superimposed the ananda onto the this, whatever this is. And so it never works. It gives temporary shantavrittis. That's the best it can do. And it does do that for different amounts of time, usually very short, shockingly short. But it does give those shantavrittis, you know. That's what it gives. But shantavrittis are time-bound. So that's the best we can do with our binding ragas. This is not... This object of desire, my own being, is not something that comes and goes. It's not a shantavritti. I have shantavrittis because my mind has given up raga dvesha. They only are non-binding, and it's given them up because the mind has found and enjoys without interruption the ananda, which is my own being. Your mind, this is the important thing for that your moksha is not a shantavritti. Shantavrittis come and go. It is the buddhi's recognition of the changelessness of myself, which is itself ananda. The mind, no matter what type of vritti it is, what is going on, it has for its being only me. So no vritti can really be separate from my own wholeness. And so it's kind of like, here I am enjoying, I'm enjoying the flood of ananda. And I'm enjoying that flood. I decide that I'm going to trek out to a little well that has a little, you know, container of ananda, little bucket of ananda in it. So I go in trekking through myself. I go and try to find this little raga, this little object of desire, so that I can have a little shantavritti of ananda when my mind is overwhelmed by ananda. And your mind is overwhelmed with just being with yourself, just to put it in normal language, I'm just being with myself. There is no one that wants to trek out to the middle of the well. It just does not occur to you. Just think of it for yourself, even within samsara, when you're whole, when you're happy, you just want to stay there. Have you ever noticed that? When you have a deep shantavritti and everything is beautiful and well, you would rather just close your eyes and just be with that. The world becomes really irrelevant. In fact, I don't want the world to disturb me in any way. Just let me have this just for a few more minutes. Just let me be. A few more minutes. Crunch, 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 crunch. Yeah. But that ananda is something you close your eyes to and you're just with, you know. That's yourself. That's the nature of yourself. When you're with yourself, that varies. I'm not trying to, when saying that there's a problem with saying that, because that is the self that is here right now that you haven't recognized, not a bliss vritti. There's a me that is right here, right now, that you recognize as this very ananda that I've always sought, the very well-being that I've always sought. So strong and so complete, so whole. That's who I am. And so being with myself is what is desirable. That is what is desirable. And so when I'm with what is desirable, I don't really want to go away from that, because that is what I want. And so that's why for the mumukshu, that desire to know myself, we say, good, that's okay. Let it be a really strong one, you know. So that you have the motivation that it takes in order to not be kind of a dilettante and jump from here and jump, oh, maybe this will work better, maybe this will work better. No, you just stay here and you'll see. So that niramama, that nirmama for so many different reasons becomes totally irrelevant, and to whatever degree it's there, it's mithya. The other, nirahankaraha. Here Shankara takes the ahankara as a bloated ego, you know, where you feel proud of yourself, proud, he says, you feel proud of your accomplishments. It's called Atma Sambhavana. Atma Sambhavana means I'm feeling proud of myself. I have a very high regard for myself. Then he says, for such things even as vidyatva, having knowledge, it's any kind of knowledge, self-knowledge or any knowledge. Say you're an expert in a field, you know, then you feel feel a lot of self-esteem over these accomplishments. Or maybe you're gaining knowledge, or maybe you know Sanskrit very, very well, and you can sort of read it fluently, and you feel, I'm very, very proud of myself, or, you know, I feel very deep respect for myself, and because I have the ability to read Sanskrit, or I have the ability to do this, or I know this, so there's, I get some self-esteem. That's what he says. Jnani has nira ahankara. That type of ahankara, he says that person, nirahankaraha, is without. He goes like this, vidyavatva, the state of having vidya's knowledge, vidyavat, one who has knowledge. That vat, like Bhagavan, Bhagavat, vidyavat, the one who has knowledge. Vidyavatva means that state of having knowledge. So having the state of having knowledge, nimitta, atma sambhavana rahitaha. And a compound ends in rahitaha, means the one who is free of or without. Without that atma sambhavana, that high self-esteem, respect or self-admiration, like say you're your own club, you're your self-admiration club. So the atma sambhavana rahita, you don't have that type of ego around your accomplishment. So that's, he says that atma sambhavana, which is nimitta, has for its cause such things, because so it says vidyavatva adi, such things as being one who has knowledge, or being one who has wealth, a lot of wealth. Like with Trump, that's one of his major things. He has a lot of wealth and he likes to flash it around as much as possible. Just a little political aside. I was watching some on YouTube, some of what's going on with the election. So a lot of the things are just immediately put over onto YouTube. And there was this one scene, it was just like a 5-minute news clip of Pence, I think his name is Mike Pence, right? Mike Pence, who was running for vice president under Trump. And you know what he was talking about? He says, he has a much better kind of personality and much more normal. But yeah, I mean, poor Mr. Trump's not normal. I was definitely not a normal person. Yet. But anyway, yeah. Ask everybody. Anyway, this Mike Pence in this little news, this little clip, he says he just arrived in this. I don't know if it was Nebraska or where it was. He had just arrived, and he says, Mr. Trump gave me a plane. He gave me a plane, a really large plane, to use while I'm flying around to all of these places. So now I have a Trump plane, you know. And it's wonderful because it is wonderful. It's a beautiful plane. It's huge. But it's not as big as Mr. Trump's. And he laughed. It was a joke. But it was a true joke. So, nirahankara, you know. The jnani is not bloated by anything because I'm already everything. To be bloated, you have to be something in the creation that has room to bloat. You know? A jnani has no room to bloat because there's nothing that's not you. You know? The whole creation is you. And so it also doesn't, there's no room to have a lack of any kind of self-esteem issues, lack of self-esteem or lack of self-worth, because other people are better than you. Some people are better than you, or they have more skill than you, they have more music than you, they have more anything than you. On a kind of an infinite continuum, say there's this continuum, and it's going on and on and on, and you're here, that's pretty good. You're on, here's the middle bit, like you're over here, or you're over here, or you're over here. But the more over here you are, the more pathetic it gets, because there's always somebody greater than you. Even when you have so much, there's somebody greater than you. And on the negative end, there's somebody who is worse off than you. Always, you know. And so what do you have? What is it, you know? Where does, you can never have enough. You can never be big enough unless you're everything, right? And so if you're not everything, you'll never be big enough. And if you need to be big enough, then you'll have to compare yourself with the people who are smaller than you and try to hobnob with the people that are bigger than you, that type of thing. It's a whole self-esteem based upon, you know, who I am in reference to everybody else. It's really a losing battle. It's no matter how great you become, there are many, many people who are greater, you know, so. And I felt Mike Pence was very smart because he was able to assuage Donald Trump's ego really well, tell what a wonderful, huge plane he is, and now he's riding around in this big, beautiful plane wherever he goes. But of course, Mr. Trump's plane is much, much bigger. He is so, Mr. Trump, is so, he didn't say this, but this is the idea, so wealthy that he can just give me a big plane. It means nothing to him, and it's so helpful to me. Of course, his plane is huge. Anyway, so that's that atmasambhavana. There's no end to it, you know? So for jnani, the respect is infinite because it's a respect toward Bhagavan. There is no ahankara, right? Any ahankara is absolutely mitya. There is only Ishwara. And for that, there's all that sambhavana. Ishwara sambhavana. You know, the absolute greatness, the absolute wonder of Ishwara, which I am. And when I say which I am, every being, including the mosquito, can say that. This Ishwara Sambhavana, the greatness of Ishwara, which I am. The Mahavakya, I am that, belongs even to the stone. It belongs even to the stone, because even though the stone is unable to say that, the Mithya stone is unable to say that, the Mithya mosquito probably won't think about it, it's still the truth. It's still the truth. My being, the wholeness of my being, is the center of everything. It is the center of me, it is the center of you, it is the center of the rock, it is the center of the whole Maya Upadi. There's no place where it is not, because you have to think like this, how can it be the center of everything? Because it itself has no time and space. The Atma has no dimension, no time and space, because from its standpoint there is no second thing, and there's no second thing within it. It's not like Atma has a right side and a left side and that there's an upper. I'm the upper Atma. You are the lower side of the Atma. I'm on the right side. I'm the Atma on the right side. You're the Atma on the left side. There is no right and left. There's no up and down. There's just conscious being that is free from time and space. And from this freedom of me, like when you, it's a good contemplation. I'll try to remember to do it actually. When we contemplate on me, you ask, what color am I? What's just being with yourself? What color am I? What size am I? Is there an up or down or right or left? These words just fall off. They have absolutely no meaning. Am I big? Am I small? I have no meaning at all. Those words all make sense only within duality, not within me. So just think, just for from your own standpoint, your own, just your own being, your own conscious being, from that, with the Maya of your mind, right? You imagine, you know, you imagine a beautiful scene, a beautiful setting. You imagine this earth in space. As soon as I say that, what's happening is you're imagining an earth in space. It's just the words themselves just bring that about. And with that imagination, any imagination, comes time and space and difference and right side, left side, this person, that person, this object, that object. It all comes immediately. And all of it exists in me. But I don't spread out to fill the space. So I am, from my standpoint, there is nothing but me. There are no sides. There is no space. So it's not a question of there being another. So with this Maya, any imagination or the whole creation, my imagination or Ishwara's manifestation of the creation, all of it only exists in me, but I have no time and space. And so there is no division in me. That means that I am the center of every point. Every point in the creation is only me. So that's a nice thing to meditate on. You can actually play with that by using your imagination and just see the truth of it, you know, that the whole imagination equally exists in my being, the absolute beauty of that. It's easy to do with your imagination or with a dream. We have something burning.
No, just the candle went out.
Oh, it just went out. That's right. I got a little hit there. So the whole thing's just existing, you know, just existing in me as Ishwara. It's easier to see it in the dream, of course, because it's all subjective. And when I wake up from the dream or when I pull back from the imagination, you know, it's so, so clear. But this is no different. It's just that I'm like a dream character. The dream character is hard for the dream character too in the dream, because the dream character is looking around through its limited mind, made of the same stuff of the dream, looking around through its sense organ, same stuff of the dream, and just experiencing subject-object duality, because that's all that it can do. That's what this upadhi can do. We're in exactly the same position, looking around, just experiencing subject-object duality, experiencing difference, experiencing change, and as a mumukshu, recognizing that this isn't going to work, that I cannot be myself in this situation. It's not possible, because that what I'm seeking is not something that's just a, you know, a bleep on the screen. I want to know, is there somebody here, you know, who is not subject to this sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha? Who is that? Who am I? That's what the mumukshu wants to know. And in order for the mumukshu to discover that, to become a jnani, look at what it has to realize. Just think of the dream character. What does the dream character have to realize from within the dream, while the dream is going on, that it is the self, that is the self of the whole dream, that it is in fact Ishwara? That's the truth. It is Ishwara. There's only one self, one Maya Upadhi, and that's Ishwara. And all of the characters within the dream are little jivas, that all belong and are really only Ishwara in the sense that they're all part to the whole. That's what that dream character has to recognize. So that dream character needs a dream guru who himself or herself had a dream guru that goes all the way back to Ishwara, to be able to hold up a mirror to that little dream character, to make that character recognize, I'm the whole, I am all of this. And in recognizing I am that whole, you know, using those prakriyas, the teaching methodologies, the dream character, the dream guru just teaches nicely, that dream character who's become a mumukshu, they recognize this body, mind, sense organs is all part of Ishwara, and Ishwara has me for its being. This is what we have to recognize. But you can have a little sympathy toward yourself when you recognize how enormous it is for the jiva, for the dream character, to recognize that. Because in that recognition, I have to give up these things that I am totally identified with as me. and how to see that really to the degree that I can in a very real way give this back to Ishwar. Give to Ishwar what is already Ishwar's. You know? No, it's mine. It's mine. It's yours because you're Ishwar. And just imagine what type of a relief it is to recognize that this body, mind, sense organs, with your limited knowledge and limited capacities, this you belongs to this you. This limited upadhi is part of this big upadhi. My limited upadhi belongs to my infinite upadhi. My limited knowledge belongs to, is part and parcel of my limitless knowledge. You know? And so what is it like for a jnani then? How much fun is it? In the sense that you can always, or I do this, I'm sure Swamiji does it, it's just something that's just so pleasing to do, is to, instead of having that kartritvam, that doership, what am I going to do now, what needs to be done, you can just kind of relax and see how is Ishwara handling this. Because it's of infinite, every moment is of infinite complexity. Right? There's so many jivas, so many people, the earth itself, all of the animals, the survival on the planet, all these things are going on. And you have to, and you're a part of that. But for you to know what is best for me at this moment is to know what is best for all beings at this moment. That's what is best. It's not what is best for just this in particular. What is best for all beings at this moment in this very complex situation? So Bhagavan, in his infinite, as that infinite expression of knowledge, that is what is natural to Ishwara, to find what is best, what is the best in this moment. And so you, as being part of that and having exactly the same self, so you can't say, that's what he thinks is best. That's what Ishwara over there thinks is best. Me over here does not. No. Ishwara is you. There's no other. There is no other. And so what is my infinite, and how is the infinite intelligence, which is a natural expression of my being, how is that handling this situation? What is the best for all beings in this situation? You know? Taking into account that jivas have free will and they can botch things up terribly. And so as they're in the middle of this botched Kali Yuga, how to make the best out of it? So you see, how does Bhagavan make the best out of the situation? And then recognize your part in it. Do your part. Do what needs to be done with that Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. You know? For just as part of Ishwara, you do for Jnani, as part of Ishwara, this is what's there for me to do, that's what I do. You know? It's Ishwara doing it. You look like that. You give the whole thing to Ishwara, even the ahankara, all of that's just mithya. That's all Ishwara also. You just naturally do the dharma of what's to be done. For a mumukshu, do the same thing, you know? Appreciate how is Ishwara handling this complex situation, you know? And then with taking all of this as prasada buddhi, whether it goes in with or without my, in agreement with my ragas or not, doesn't really make any difference because I receive the whole thing with that prasada buddhi and that shraddha in Bhagavan. The shraddha in Bhagavan, the shraddha in Ishwara becomes less and less shraddha and more knowledge. The more you understand, the more you see and recognize. See, it's a beautiful combination of shraddha, bhakti, devotion that expresses in so many different ways, not just in one way, expresses in so many different ways. But it's that's the kind of relationship that we have. Beautiful. So the one who is this one is Shantam Adhikachati. That's really the jnani. Once you say nir spriha, nir namaha, nir ahankara, no ahankara, that's the jivan mukta. But that one is the one who has the absolute shanti. Because anything that goes on in my mind, they're all, you know, just preferences, they're all non-binding. because it's all just Bhagavan. You know, so there's no stricture in the mind. And whatever is going on in the mind, you know, if there's some twinge of something, it's like riding on water. It doesn't really matter at all. But the truth of it is my own being, which there's no riding on water. There's not even any, there's nothing. There's only me, you know. So in reference to that, I'm just going to tell you one thing now. We'll do the last verse of this chapter tonight. I was thinking in the meditation, I didn't want to disrupt the meditation at the end, so I thought I'd just talk to you about it now because it's really in line with this verse. And that is, Swamiji used to just talk in generally, and I know that when I was having conversations with him, usually about, you know, how to handle when I was having to manage the ashram and things, that's really under kind of a pressure cooker sometimes. And he said, he told me what he does. He said, you know, I just take everybody fresh every day. So if somebody, because sometimes with Swamiji, he would have a lot of projections on him, you know, and weird motivations were projected on him. It's just all unconscious material. You get really angry or really terribly, terribly hurt, thinking that Swamiji has done this or Swamiji has done that, you know. And say things that they really in their right mind would not say. You know, that's like what Shankara said in his Bhashav a few verses ago. You know, in that one where the desire leads to anger, leads to krodha, kama leads to krodha, and then that leads to the delusion of the mind and all of this, and then pretty soon the buddhi's gone and you're destroyed. That's the verse. That's when Shankara said, you know, even a disciple toward their teacher will just go off and say things that come only out of krodha. He says that because that just never happens. But with krodha, with anger, that can happen. And so Swamiji just said, you know, whatever the situation, I just take everybody fresh. Like say they had a temper tantrum or something and said all kinds of things and were all upset. That's how they were then, you know. And now they're like this. This is the person I'm with now. This is the person I'm with now. He said, I don't carry the people along with me, right? I'm just with them. I'm with them when I'm with them. I'm with them now. So I always take people fresh. And when you think of it, from the standpoint, and this is connected to the meditation, we are never changed by no matter what has happened. I mean, from the standpoint of this jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, your mind can be very hurt. You can have gone through this trauma that has caused little ones to be in the unconscious and all of this. But this is all within Bhagavan's creation. From the standpoint of me, I don't have any trauma. I have never been hurt, you know. I have never been betrayed. I have never had to become a part of myself, be sequestered away into my unconscious. That's not me. That's not the self that is here. Your self that is here is always the same, ever fresh. So even from the standpoint that this body, mind, sense organs within this relative world, lots of things that have happened, and I'm carrying a lot of those things in my mind. I carry a lot of hurts. I carry a lot of things in the unconscious. It's not to deny that, but it's to recognize that who I am. And I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. And I will always be absolutely fine, and I have always been absolutely fine. Even when I was 3 years old, from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, and my mom was not picking me up and I was screaming my lungs out. Okay. Even at that time, the me is a sangha. Nothing at all happens to me. And so as you gain knowledge, is that ahankara shifts from your mind, from your pains, from your hurts, to me, then I can take everything fresh. It's not that you don't have memory, you know, but you don't carry things with you. That's why Swamiji can say, you know, I take everyone fresh because I'm fresh. You are fresh. In fact, for you, there is no time. And so if you take yourself fresh, you can take your mind fresh also. You can take the little ones fresh. It means this is how they are today. This is how my mind is today. This is how I feel today, now. That's the reality, you know, for the moment. That's the reality of the moment. And so to recognize, continue to recognize, like when we do these meditations and things, just to let you sit, try to sit in this, that in spite of all of the work I'm doing, working on my mind to kind of free it of some of the pain-producing ways that I am with others, it's all raga dvesha based. But I have to sit with my mind to show it that, to teach it that. Because it's just behaving like all other minds behave within samsara. It's innocent in that way. It didn't. Your mind did not become ignorant. It has never not been ignorant. The ignorance is beginningless. That's the part, that's being the nature of being a part to the whole in an infinite upadhi. The mind itself is very limited, you know, and so it doesn't know that it is the whole, you know. It has no pramanas, no means of knowledge to differentiate itself from me, right? So it has to become a mumukshu and catch on that there's something not right here and ask Bhagavan, please help me. And then you become somebody who needs that sixth pramana. You need that you need the Upanishads. You need the Upanishad pramana. As soon as you need it, you get it. That's Bhagavan's promise. You need it. The question is correct. Boom. Here's your teacher. Everything, the whole universe will work itself around to get you your teacher. Because it's time for you to have a pramana, the pramana. When the pramana has done its job, then just like you don't carry the boat once you've gone across the river, then you don't put the boat on your head and keep chugging along. You leave the boat. When you need the boat, you use it. When you didn't, when you get across the river, you leave it there. So we don't have to carry this third eye around it with us, you know. So this eye of jnana chakshu. Not necessary. The guru is your jnana chakshu, your eye of knowledge, right? So it's all very beautiful, very simple. Once the knowledge takes place and I recognize myself, you know, then I really can neutralize all these raga dveshas in reference to everything that is ailing me. Because all the way through, there's something that I needed to be different for me to be happy, even when I'm little. You know, and there's nothing I can do about it when I'm little. There's something I really needed to be happy, you know, and I didn't get it. So I suffer, you know. But yourself was never little. Yourself was never middle-aged. Yourself was never old, right? Yourself is free. And so no matter what happened, when you're a mumukshu, you recognize yourself that is untouched and always has been untouched. And then with all of these ways that we know, including getting self-knowledge, but all the ways we know of working with our mind, all of those ways work. They're so, so, so healing. You know, and so we just have to discover the desire to do that work. And that also comes in time. You have to be in a protected environment for some time. Because sometimes for wasam, while we feel very justified in our hurts. I'm hurt and I'm not going to not be hurt because I want you to know how much hurt I am. Or whatever. There's all kinds of lots of things going on. It all has to be entangled, you know. Just be entangled with respect and with love because none of us, you know, just fell into ignorance because we were lazy or something. And Bhagavan gave us a way out. The ignorance is beginningless and there's a way out. So that's, ahoo, that's good. Om, that's it.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.